Hello, everyone. You're listening to Show Talk with Angela Butler. And I am Angela Butler for those of you who are not familiar with me. I'm now flameonradio.com, and I'm very happy to be on this show. Well, not show, but radio station. Tonight's interview is with, of course, Miss Melba Moore, who I am waiting on to call in. For those of you who don't know, Miss Melba Moore is a Tony Award winner, and she has acted, had over 70 television and films, so that's really great. And she also appears on 14 Complications, so that's really great. So 70 singles, that's a whole lot. Miss Moore has been performing a lot of years, and she will also be appearing at 54 Below May 22nd and May 23rd. Her tickets can be bought at 646-476-3551. That's Miss Melba Moore. How are you, Miss Moore?
Hi, how are you?
Hi, it's good to have you on Show Talk with Angela Butler.
Thank you.
You're more than welcome.
Okay.
So, Miss Moore, this is your third time on Show Talk with Angela Butler, if I'm not mistaken. And I'm so glad to have you on my show. It's an honor.
Thanks for having me back. Thank you.
You're more than welcome. Now, I know I've asked you these questions before, but I'm on a new radio station in Alabama, so I'm going to go over some things that people might not know about you.
Oh, that's fine. I don't mind repetition.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Well, for one thing, you replaced Diane Keaton. I'm reading in your bio in a play. How was that? I mean, how did that feel being the first Black American female in a Broadway play?
Well, the Broadway play. No, I wasn't the first Black American female in a Broadway play. The play was Hair.
Yes, ma'am.
The musical was Hair, and I was the first Black actress to replace a white actress.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you for correcting me.
In the play. And, well, it was my first acting role, and I really didn't come into the play as an actress. I came in primarily as a singer, so I was really kind of learning on the job. And the Broadway musical Hair kind of like broke all the rules. It was the first rock musical. In other words, the musicals have Broadway style music, but this was the first one that really had, well, I guess primarily because the audiences were Caucasian and the play was written by Caucasian. They called it rock music, but it was really R&B music.
Oh, okay. All right.
So, you know, it really was the first of its kind in a lot of ways. And so I felt like, I guess, I really wasn't aware of it. There's so much to learn at the same time, but kind of a trailblazer. You knew you were doing something that hadn't been done. Kind of knew that, you know. And you were part of something that, you know, I didn't write the play, I didn't produce the play, I didn't direct the play, so I wasn't in charge. So you had to be grateful that you were participating in something where people, they just wanted you to be who you were. They weren't putting any restraints on you. So it was a good feeling. It was almost like being kind of like in college where you experiment, but you're safe.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Your mother had a number one single, if I'm not mistaken, Don't Stop Now, 1943.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, you've had a extensive career. I've been reading over your bio and resume. It says you had 70 singles, over 70 singles. And you have, I think, 14 complications and so many albums. I mean, you have just really been busy.
Well, I can't take all the credit. When you have compilations, that's really somebody else taking your music and kind of compiling it or putting it together with other people's. A lot of times they'll do that. You won't even know that it's done. Or record labels will, I guess, kind of like rent your music out to different people who want to. again. So I'm glad they did it, but I can't take the credit for doing the compilations. It's like if your music is popular and people can still make money off of it, sometimes they re-release it and put it on with other artists and different combinations of re-releasing the record. So I can just say thank them for doing it and keep my music out there.
Okay. Right. You have a beautiful voice. I just want to say that. I mean,
you can repeat voice. That if you want to. No, I'm joking.
You have a beautiful voice.
No, thank you. Thank you.
And I love your song, Love Is.
Oh, thank you. Yes. Did you have you on for that to promote that?
No, ma'am. I didn't. No, I don't.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Okay. Love Is. Also, I was telling the listening audience that you will be performing, I think it's called 54 Below, on May 22nd
yes.
and May 23rd at 7 p.m. both nights.
Yes, you can repeat that.
Yes, Miss Melba Moore, everyone, will be performing at 54 Below May 22nd and May 23rd at 7 p.m. both nights. And the tickets can be bought at this number. It says 1646-476-3551.
Hey. Yes, and that's in New York City. It's at 254 West 54th Street between Broadway and 8th Avenue. So it's right in the theater district.
That is great. That is great. You sang with Freddie Jackson. I remember he's worked for you, really, and from what my understanding is, and many, many other people. Aretha Franklin, Dionne Warwick. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. And you're hardworking.
Yes.
And you're very, very talented.
I was reading
also where you play Luda Belle Guzzi, Mae Jenkins.
You said that better than me.
Okay. obviously Cleveland, Little in the Musical, Pearly in 1970. I mean, yes, that's wonderful. And it says here that you had no acting, no training.
Right.
Wow, that's great. That is great.
That was a wonderful experience, and that really kind of put me in mainstream, or made me, you know, because from getting the Tony Award for Pearly, well, let me give you a little bit of background on that. It's a musical comedy. At first, it was written and put up on Broadway by Ossie Davis. He wrote it, and he and Ruby Dee starred in it. And it was just a straight comedy. That means there was no music in it. It was just a comedy. And then they mounted it again, added music for it, and that's when I got to do the part that originally Miss Ruby Dee played, so that was a great honor for me. Of course, we all knew who Ossie Davis and Ruby Dee was by the time I got to Broadway, but I'd never done any acting or anything like that. But how I got that part was when I was in the Broadway musical Hair that I was just telling you about, where I replaced Diane Keaton. I got that from a recording session, so I really didn't audition for it. So after I had been doing the show for a long time, especially after I'd gotten the lead, after I'd replaced Diane Keaton, one of my friends in the show was reminding me that I really did not even know how to audition. And she was telling me that I really should start just going, finding out, look at the backstage newspaper, that's what it's called. It tells you when they're having auditions and where they are and the type of the role it's going to be. And you start going and making the rounds. And you kind of learn how to audition, you know, what shows are coming up and all that. So it's like, you know, going for a job. And so I was going to go, and she gave me the information for these auditions. And I was going to go up to see, could I learn how to audition? But I got the part. And the part was Luda Belle Guzzi Mae Jenkins. And it was in Pearly. And to make a long story a little bit shorter, eventually I got the Tony Award for that, which, of course, is the biggest award you can get for a Broadway play. And that then made the people in television invite me to do all the major television shows. I got my own TV show. It really put me on the map.
Yes, it did. And like I said, you're very hardworking. I mean, in 1972, it says that you and actor Clifton Davis co-starred in your own television series. Is that the one you're talking about?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Oh. Wow. Okay. Is there been anybody in your life, I mean, that has really influenced you and just kept you going, or, you know, encouraged you? Because you've been, like I was telling the listeners, you have over, you have well over 70 singles.
Okay, well, now you're talking about recordings. To me, that's like a different arena of entertainment and even music than theater was. And my first job was as a music teacher in the public schools of Newark, New Jersey.
Yeah.
And when I decided I wanted to try to be in the industry, I asked my father to help me, my stepfather. And he took me around to some of his friends, and that's how I got into doing backup studio singing in record business. And from that, kind of accidentally, I got into theater. But I really didn't have a manager or anything like that. I got with an agency, because, you know, somebody has to book you, somebody has to do the business part for you. So that was one group of people that were taking care of that part of my career. So basically, really, I stopped doing backup. I was not in the record industry at all then. I was just in theater. But then later on, I met and married my then husband. Of course, we're not married now. But he and I worked on getting back into the recording industry now that I had popularity, I was famous, and, you know, we started shopping around to the record companies to get signed to a label so we could do these recordings. So he's the reason why I have all these hit records. he's the one that was working hard. Not that I wasn't, but what I'm trying to say is, you know, you could be the greatest singer in the world, but if somebody doesn't make the business part of you, then you that. So I was with Epic Records, Buddha Records, Mercury Records, Capitol Records, and I'm probably leaving out some, but I've been with all the major record labels over these, you know, last 20, 30 years. And so over all that time, I continue to put out recordings. So now I got a lot of them out.
Yes, yes, you do. I mean, you have a song from your CD, Forevermore.
Yes.
Yes, you do. It's called Let's Dance.
Yes, that's a new one.
Yeah, and that's a great one. I'm going to do everything I can to play it later on in the okay. show, because I want you to come back to the show, and I don't want you to feel like I'm being unprofessional.
Okay.
So, all right. I have a question. Do you have any children, Miss Moore?
I have one daughter, yes.
Mm-hmm. Have a child? I didn't know that.
Yes, she's out in L.A. now, learning to be a writer. She's studying at UCLA. She likes television comedy writing.
Oh, okay. So, okay.
She said she didn't want to sing. That was. She said she didn't want to. She could sing. She said she didn't want to sing. She said it's too hard.
Understand that. Did you ever have any voice lessons or anything like that?
Oh yes, I have a Bachelor of Arts degree in music education, a major in voice, and a minor in education.
Oh yes. I just thought about what you said earlier in the conversation that you were a music teacher,
yes.
A teacher.
It was vocal music, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you're now, are you an independent artist in control
yeah.
of every aspect of your song? That's great.
Yeah, I'm one of them.
Okay. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that. It's like a lot of people lately, in the past, I said 5 years, 10 years, have been going that way.
Right.
To having
right.
a record label.
Right.
So the song Lift Every Voice and Sing, would you like to tell the listening audience how that came about?
Sure. I was a mentee. I was mentored by an incredible woman by the name of Dorothy Height, and she was the president of the National Council of Negro Women, which is an organization that has to be about 80 years old or so, maybe more. And it was bequeathed to her by Mary McLeod Bethune. And she invited me to be the membership chair. And as membership chair, I would travel all around the country with her, just being with her and watching her and listening to her and seeing the different works, the community service works that the organization did for the black community and especially for black women, to empower women. And so she said, "No, well, why don't you why don't you sing the Negro National Anthem at some of our prayer breakfasts and our different things to open up the ceremonies or whatever we're going to do?" I said, "Well, what is that?" She said, "You don't know the Negro National Anthem?" I said, "No, ma'am." She said, "How can you be a Negro and not know the Negro National Anthem?" Well, I was raised in the North, and we didn't get black history or Negro history, so I didn't know about it. But anyway, I learned about it and learned that it is kind of like our national anthem, and every nation has a song that identifies them. But since African Americans were brought here as slaves, we were kind of denied that. And the reason why we have this song as an anthem is because we had to fight to become first-class citizens, even after we were freed from slaves. And we've always done everything with music. But, of course, this is something that every nation has. But we really didn't, you know, the Star-Spangled Banner is America's anthem. But everybody who's in America comes from somewhere else, and that country has a song. And we didn't have one. For a while we didn't. But through our struggles and people giving up their lives, this song emerged as our national anthem. It's Lift Every Voice and Sing. And Dr. Dorothy Height backed me up, she and many other black congressional caucus people, to have it entered into the congressional record as our official anthem, because there was nothing on record saying that we had a song that identified us. So to me, that was a very important opportunity that I had.
Oh, okay. And you've got a string of callers here, but I'm not going just yet to the phones. Because sometimes, usually, I find people just call in to listen, not comment. Oh. So, with all this going on, Ms. Moore, I mean, all of these things going on, a hit, a TV show, Tony, Grammy nominations, and all this. All this going on, I mean, so much, much more. You had this song, "Lean on Me." You sing with Eartha Kitt, you perform in Broadway with Mr. Eartha Kitt and lots of people. So at this point in your life, what's next for you?
Okay. Besides the performance at 54 Below, which you promoted very well.
Thanks, ma'am.
I'm working on remounting my one-woman play with music that's called Still Standing, The Melba Moore Story, and it's my autobiography. And I've toured it quite a few times, but now I'm revamping the production part of it, and I'm getting a legitimate producer and a company. What we have, when you have touring companies, they are, officially, you know, organized traveling companies, theater companies. And so before, I just did it myself, and I booked it myself, and I wrote it myself, because I wanted to learn how to do it and how it's done. But now that that's done, I'm going to get professional producers to tour it. And so that's my main project. That's quite a project for me, because doing the business part of it, once again, is new to me. So I'm taking my time, and I have to go out and meet people and find out who's going to be right for the project, so that's time-consuming. But, you know, besides that, of course, I got my CD, and I'm performing, but my kind of pet attention is on my one-woman play now, so I can get it mounted the right way.
Oh, okay, your one-woman play. You did that before, too.
Yes, I've done it before.
Mm-hmm. But, you did so much Broadway, and I was reading, this is in the past, you made the statement that it was a hiatus for you because it took away time for you becoming, I think you said, quote, the number one R&B artist. And I'm shocked to hear that because, you know, that's a hiatus for you. And I'm wondering, how is that? I mean, people would love to be on Broadway. I mean, so could you explain that?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
It's just I was reading your bio, And in your bio, you said that Broadway was something of a hiatus for you performing in Broadway. This was before now. This was years before, you know, now. And I was wondering, how can you consider Broadway a hiatus? I mean, people would...
Well, I don't ever remember saying that. I don't know how it could be a hiatus of any kind either. So I think it's probably a misquote. I don't think I would have said
oh,
it.
Oh, I apologize.
Unless I said it by mistake, you know.
Yes, ma'am. I was thinking about...
Okay, because the way I see it, you know, you have seasons where you do this, that, or the other, and you know, if opportunities come, you know, maybe you stop for a moment doing something and you do something else. But I wouldn't consider taking a hiatus.
Oh, okay.
If I said that, I corrected. I wouldn't say that. No.
Okay. I apologize for that, then.
That's all right.
Okay, so you're going to be performing at 54 Below in New York?
New York City, yes.
New York City, May 22nd and May 23rd at 7 p.m. both
yes.
nights. And the tickets
yes.
can be bought at 646-476-3551.
Yes.
Okay. So, you were also in 1982, you were on the top five R&B chart. Is there any time in your career where you decided you like acting or singing over the other, or do you just love both?
Well, you know, to be honest with you, I think I'm very lucky in theater because, you know, as I was explaining to you before, I didn't have any training and for Hair and Pearlie. I didn't even have an actor, an agent, or a manager. And I'm really just trying right now with my wonderful manager to completely learn the business aspect of it, because it's quite a bit to it. You have to have a skill. It's a full-time job, and it's really, really, really hard work. So I just kind of fell into those things. And I feel like, you know, doing the musical Hair, doing Pearlie, doing Timbuktu, and then later on I did Les Miserables, and I played the role of Fantine. And Les Miserables is about the French Revolution. It has nothing to do with Americans or black people. But I got
wow.
the female lead in that.
Yes, she did.
So, and I didn't have a manager at that time either. So I feel lucky about that. But it doesn't make me, like, pick it over music, I guess, because – music was the centerpiece of my family, and that's where, you know, family fellowship. And when I say family, too, I was first an only child with a very broken family. And then when my mother married my stepfather, not only did I have a sister and a brother and grandmothers and aunts and uncles and family, I had a real family, but music was the centerpiece. So I think music is always going to be just something so special, just a part of, like, breathing, you know?
Okay. All right. That's wonderful. Great. I think it's wonderful how long you've been performing, and from the looks of things, you're not stopping, and I think that's great.
Thank you.
I just feel like you should have had more Grammys. That's all, because
well,
I love all
some more.
Songs. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. So are you going to be performing anywhere in Florida anytime soon?
You know, I don't have anything on my mind right now, but that's because my manager is always working on things and keeping up my itinerary and posting it. So if you go on melbourne.com, if you don't mind, you could, you know, take a look and see what I've got coming up there.
Uh-huh.
Or I guess Facebook or Twitter or Instagram.
Okay.
So I try to remember, like, what's immediately upcoming so I can invite people, but my manager usually takes care of just, you know, the whole itinerary thing. So I beg
okay.
ignorance right now.
Okay. All right. I'm looking at the bio, and it says that, again, I know I said this earlier, but you have over 14 compilations and 19 albums and just 70 singles. You did voiceovers. You just did Broadway musicals. You even did contribute your talents to, I don't know, if ABC after school specials, the Cosby Show, Mother's Day in 1989, All Dolls Go to Heaven, 1989, Monsters, 1988, Death by Temptation, 1989, and on it goes. You even have received honorary degrees in humanities from Florida A&M University.
Yes,
in humanities, yeah.
Yes. So you have to call me doctor, okay?
Yes, I do, Dr. Moore. Yes, Dr. Moore. Okay, all right. So just the one lady show that you're working on, do you know how long before people can go and see it, or you don't have a time frame yet?
I don't have a time frame yet. We're actually, the order that we're going in is we're putting together, you know, like a marketing package, because we have to pitch it to people and let them see. And I don't want to, we're not gonna do it the way I did it before. We would go to somebody and they would put it up and we'd perform it. What I'd like to do now is pitch it to as many people as we can that will accept it, that would actually create a tour where you actually tour, you know, go from one place to the other instead of one engagement.
Oh,
when
okay.
I did it, I didn't know how to do it. And I'm not saying I still don't know how to do it, so I'm going to get professional people to do it this time.
Okay. All right. I'm trying to play your song, Just Dance. That's what I'm trying to do while we're talking. I like this one, too. It's by Miss Melba Moore. I'm having a little technical problem, so I apologize for that. So we're going to keep talking until I work this out. So your manager, you have a great manager, by the way. I just want to say that. Yes.
We can say his name is Ron Richardson.
Yes, Richardson. Ron Richardson. Great person. So how long have you been I don't know how to put this, your own boss, your own label?
Right. Oh, yes. I guess it's been about 15 years now, roughly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but all prior to that, we had a management company called Hush Productions, and we started out managing me, but then we managed people like Freddie Jackson, as you were mentioning before, Lilo Thomas, Melissa Morgan, Kashif, who wrote You Give Good Love for Whitney Houston, and he also wrote Love Come Down for Evelyn Champagne King, just a host of really, really great songwriters and producers of the 80s, primarily, because we got me started around 1979, 1978, and then the beginning of the 80s, we expanded our company to launch other artists, like some of the ones I just mentioned to you.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So do you have any autobiographies? I didn't read that in your bio, and I'm just wondering.
You mean a book?
Yes, ma'am. Book.
I have one that's, you know, rough stages, first drafts, and so what I'm looking to do now is I don't have a big management team yet, because Ron and I really had to build my career back up from shambles. That's been really quite a job to do. So in some instances where an artist would be able to do several different things at the same time, hopefully we'll be able to do that in the near future, but we've had to take one thing and, you know, rebuild the foundation. So I've had a wonderful book that's been kind of laying there waiting for us to be able to get back to it and then start shopping it to publishers. Of course, these days, of course, I know you can self-publish, but I think my first priority will be my one-woman play. And since I'm still really kind of getting my feet wet in the business aspect of it, I don't want to just push and go try to do a whole lot of things at one time, because once it's done, I want it done right. And I, like you said, how long have you been your boss?
Yes, ma'am.
And it's not so much just a matter of time, but it's a matter of changing hats, because if you've been an accountant, you can't just get up and be a singer.
Oh, okay. Right.
You know, so, yeah, I'm trying to paint a picture that if you want to really build your business right, you have to know what the details are and the elements are. And it's not something you just get up and do. People who do that well are talented too. And so if you don't have that talent, or sometimes you have to do a modicum of it yourself, whether you have the talent or not, or you won't be in the business. But I'm trying to get it up to a point where I can continue to build a business team. And that means I need some good counsel. And how do you pick a good publisher, you know?
Oh, okay. All right.
But the book is done.
Oh, okay. Yes, I understand.
Well,
that.
The rough draft. I mean, because if you want to give it to a top publisher, then you have to edit it, and that's a professional person that needs to be done. You know, you have to refine it. You have to decide who your market is going to be. You need some professional help, I think, in doing that. I could just write a book, but the other fine details of it, I don't know.
Oh, okay. I understand that. I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
I understand that. But I know she said something that kind of caught my attention. You said you had to rebuild your career. I don't understand that. I mean,
It's a long story. So if you want you and your listeners, maybe you can get go in the archives of Unsung. You know, the TV show?
Yes, ma'am, Unsung.
They told the whole story.
Okay. All right, Unsung. That's on YouTube also.
Right, you probably get it there, and it's quite a bit of detail, and I know we probably don't want to go off into that so much today. It'll take
no,
a lot of time.
No.
But
okay.
You get the whole story there.
All right. Okay. I understand. I didn't know you owned Unsung. All right.
Yeah.
Yes, that's a show that interviews just about all celebrities.
Okay. No, not all celebrities. All celebrities that have had some real challenges. And in some cases, they call it unsung because they were very popular, or they should have been very popular. And, you know, you don't know what happened to them or how did they lose their popularity, but they've all had challenges. That's how they get to be on that show. If you've had everything go really well for you, you don't get to be on unsung.
Oh, okay. All right, I understand that. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, well, all I know is you're a great singer, famous,
thank
and I love
you.
Having you on my show.
That's all you need to know, okay?
Okay. All right.
We'll dwell on that part.
Okay. I'm trying desperately to play this song. I mean, because I don't just say, I don't want to come back on her show because she couldn't play this song when I'm trying.
No, that won't happen, honey.
Oh, well, you're a kind person because a lot of people would say, hey, she's unprofessional. I wrote a book, too, a couple of books. I'm a diabetic. And when you're talking about self-published, I self-published mine.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of wished I hadn't.
Really?
Yeah, I wished I had been able to get an agent.
Mm-hmm. It's a lot to it, you know?
I don't know.
I mean, now that you've done it, though, you might want to continue and just educate yourself as you go along, because at least you've done it, you know.
Yes, ma'am. Yeah, I just feel like it could have been better, you know.
Well, I'm sure, because you're not a publisher, or you weren't, you know.
No, ma'am, I knew hardly nothing about it, but it was something
right.
I wanted to try.
Right.
But I did, and I wasn't satisfied with what I did, but I can educate myself more.
Right, right.
And I'm still trying to play this song, and I'm so embarrassed. Okay.
Well, just take your time. If you get it, we get it. If not, then we'll chat.
Okay. All right. So after 54 Below, you said the people could go to your website and find out where you're performing at?
Yeah, the other performances that I have, because I don't have a list of them in front of me or anything. And like I said, Ron really stays in charge of that and keeps everybody up to date as to what I'm doing.
Yeah. You know, this has nothing to do with your career.
Okay,
and,
you're allowed.
I'm allowed. I have to ask you this, though. And I asked a lot of my guests this, and I hope you're not uncomfortable answering this. I'm not trying to put you on the spot because I know you have, you know, lots and lots of people who love your music and love you. But what in your opinion, do you think about the police? I just thought I'd ask about what's going on in the media. Killing of the young
people. I'm not sure, actually, which thing you're speaking about, but I was with Reverend Al Sharpton the other night, and I'm sure he's on top of everything. But the thing of it is, what we're seeing in the media now is something that African-Americans have lived with ever since we've been in this country.
Yes, ma'am.
And it goes much further than you know, we used to say even just a couple of years ago about the racism that was so inherent in it, but it goes much deeper than that, because now we're having issues with policemen that are of color, and so it has to, it's the systemic depowering of the African American community in a variety of ways, and it starts with having, well, it starts with us having been made slaves, and I say that because we were purposely destroyed as families, destroyed as human beings, and for, you know, a couple hundred years. And you're not just going to patch that back up even by passing laws and saying, okay, it's going to be okay, because the some of the deep, horrible things that were done are still
Yes, ma'am. Horrible.
You know, they're still being the fruits of them are still here, and we're going to have to continue to. Well, this is why we need Christianity. We need the church. God is the only one that can heal this, and it has to be done the way it's being done, and other ways too. We have to have exposure of it. People have to demonstrate. In some cases, there may be some violence. I'm certainly not advocating that, but. You know, we're so marketed, there's so much, and news has become entertainment. How do we get through? You know, because these are horrible situations that human beings live in all the time. I know as an educator, I knew that as a black teacher in a black neighborhood, we were not going to get proper supplies. We were not going to get equipment. We were not going to get proper attention to the needs that we had in our community. And I haven't taught school for a very, very, very long time. And one of the reasons I was frustrated that, I mean, I love it, I'm passionate about it. I had to fight the system in order to get any respect for music. And then eventually a lot of it was taken out. And there's just a callousness and a misunderstanding. This is along with so many other things that have kind of gone by the wayside in terms of what America was established for. It was established for morality. It was established for religious freedom. It was established so that people could have good education. Freedom of speech did not mean cussing people out and abusing people. And there's just a lot of healing that has to go on. One of the reasons that I'm inspired to work hard to be successful as an artist is I like to do positive things. And it's not going to do me any good to sit and complain. I'm not going to have a voice there. I don't have the talent that Reverend Al Sharpton has. He can be an activist. So I have to do mine as an artist. And what I like to do is try to present strong, positive alternatives. And say, for instance, you know, you don't have to be a teenager to have a new record. And of course, if the recording companies don't want you anymore, then you start your own label. But you don't give up, because there's a place for you, and you have to, what can I say? It's my way of evangelizing and saying God is good, and this is how we should live our lives. I can't dictate to you, but I can set an example.
Yes, I understand that. What struck me about what you just said, the entertainment, those horrible things, the media and the death, of course, you know, of the young people, the killing. What struck me, you said, was entertainment, and that is so true. And it's not entertaining to me, because I know it could be me, it could be anybody I know,
right.
My family.
Well, that's the thing, too, in some cases, if you're not African-American and you don't suffer this, it doesn't mean the same thing to you.
Yeah, I know discrimination, racism is alive and well, and my mom has.
A lot of people think it's not if they don't experience it, but I think there is becoming an awakening. It has to go much further, but it's very, very different in terms of how people are responding, like for instance in Baltimore, than it would have been 20 years ago.
Okay.
I mean, even in terms of how the news media have many more black people in it now.
Yeah.
And I mean,
for me to say that
recognizes the racism that is and was there. You know, why is it a great thing for it to be, you know, different races be represented? It should have always been that way. But this is when we're talking about, you know, reality. So,
yes, ma'am. I grew up understanding my family is from Alabama, and my grandparents were run out of Alabama by the KKK because the land is different.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. And in some cases, there are, you know, still pockets of areas where that is still going on, where, you know, if you live in somewhere else, maybe you heard about it in the history books or something, you think that was a...
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say.
If you're not African-American, and especially a male, then you think that was something of the past, something that you heard of, but no.
That's why when I hear young people say it's the new, we got a black president, this is a new time period. To me, history is repeating itself. I mean, it's always went on, the killers and things, but the media is really blowing it up. And I don't know if that's, I guess that's, I know that's a good thing that's being brought to the attention, but I just don't like the thought of people being entertained by murder. You know,
Well, you know what I think that, unfortunately, because we're people, again, I'll say that's why we need God. Anything that we have can be misused and, you know, abused. So you want to tell the news, but I think that also news and, you know, television and media, such huge money-making things, is going to be polluted. There's so much power. So, you know, you can't really rely on the news not to have an agenda. Because they're getting paid, and they have to have people. They have to get the ratings, or I don't know if they do ratings anymore. But they have to get the sponsors. In other words, it gets to be about money.
Okay, it's about money. Yeah, and my mother even said it was about money, but she also says what slavery was about either, and that this is went on, and I knew it. Well, my grandparents, great grandparents, and grandparents knew. You know, this is nothing new, but
right.
It. When I was a teenager, because I was born in the year 1970, there were things going on, but you didn't, back then, you didn't hear about a whole, in my area, a whole lot of black American kids who I knew going to boys' home. It wasn't like that. It wasn't like that. It was more when they got older that they, you know, that things, but it wasn't like the killings.
I said violence has just grown rampant in every area.
Okay. All right, I understand what you're saying. I'm still trying to play your song. I've had Megna
Evers. We're talking about violence and we're trying to play Just Dance.
Yes, ma'am. I'm still trying to play this thing.
We're trying.
I'm trying to wrong with this computer saying I got a firewall and I may have spyware virus. So... like I said, I hope this doesn't stop you from coming on my show, but I was just going to say, yes, ma'am, Ms. Moore, Megna Evers is a distant cousin of mine. He was my grandmother's first cousin.
Yes.
And so it's a lot of things that I know that some people may not know. To be honest with you, I've never met Mr. Evers, even though he's my third cousin.
Yes.
But the rest of the family knows who he is.
Yes.
And I was brought up understanding, you know, about racism, but they burned my grandparents' house down in Alabama, so, you know.
Yes, that's what I'm saying, that the difference between you being in Birmingham, Alabama, and my being in New York City is huge. You know, being black in New York City, you can always, you know, find out that you're black one way or another, but it was like such a world of difference. We might, you know, think... We wouldn't be anywhere as sensitive to the racism as you would be, because it was really violence that you lived in the midst of. You could not walk down the street without being very, very aware that you were in danger.
Yes. Yes, ma'am.
I mean, just walk down the street.
Yes, ma'am.
No.
Yes. So, yeah, my experience is probably a little different than other people.
Mm-hmm. But
I've lived in the North.
But of course, we have family members living in the North and the South. We would tell each other about these things, you know.
Yeah.
So we would know that they exist, and we would know that we are black. And we're reminding each other, never forget that.
Yes, ma'am.
And we still have to do that, especially our boys. Now they have a new word for it called profiling.
Racial profile. Yes, ma'am. Profile. Racial,
but
yeah.
I know it's the same thing that hasn't finished being rooted out yet.
Yeah, about 7, 8 years ago, I got a ticket for being in my drive, sitting in my driveway without a seat. But I'm like, come on now, you know. So, you know, it is what it is. Sitting along the driveway, and I was just sitting there, and I didn't even see the cop. He didn't even put on lights. But I'm not gonna go into that. It's not about me. It's about
you say you could, but you're not gonna do that, okay?
No, I'm not. And this is not a show to be talking, you know, about discrimination and how bad things are. It's just I had wanted to ask you that question because I've asked.
But I, no, it's okay. I can understand why you do because we're people, and yes, we're talking about music and everything. And but we live here, and life is going on here, and I think that's very important, especially for us entertainers. So many times, and, you know, if we've been in the industry a long time like I have, you just get in the habit, especially if someone is paying for you to go on and promote something, you have to say what they, you know, sent you to to talk about. And so we get into the habit of only talking about the music, only talking about ourselves as artists, and really whatever part that we show you that's about life is very minimal and has something to do with where you're going to perform and nothing else. No, we don't have to do that now. We can talk about life, too.
Okay, I wasn't certain because I know the Force and D's were real open. The two of the members of the Force, they were real outspoken, and that surprised me. And I'm not trying to get, you know, exploiting anybody, but, you know, like I said, I just want to know what your opinion was. You know, what did you think of what was going on? Because to me, it's sickening. The criminal justice system, it's just all wrong.
It's very bad, very corrupt. And a lot of people are suffering not only ignorance, but, well, just a lot of oppression and depression. And it's not, you know, and disorder. And it's coming from a lot of different places. But essentially, it's coming from the breakdown of the family.
Yes. Yes, it is. It is the breakdown of the film. You're right. It's a whole lot going on. Like you said, it's going to take God.
Right. And, you know, all of us caring like you do and using whatever platform we have to present a positive alternative, I like to call it, and to try to carry yourself in whatever area of life or vocation you have in a strong and positive way.
You know? Yes, I try hard. I've been trying for a long time. And, you know, like I said, I appreciate you coming on my show. I'm still trying to get Just Dance, the mix here.
Well, at least we said the name of the song is Just Dance.
And
on go on iTunes and CD Baby and all the musical outlets on the Internet. You can find Just Dance.
Okay. Also, the CD is Forevermore.
Right.
It's Forevermore, and Miss Morris told you where you can find it, where she'll be performing it next. She said 54 Below, New York, May 22nd, May 23rd, 7 p.m. both nights. Tickets can be bought at 646-476-3551. So I encourage those of you who are near New York or going to visit New York to go and see Miss Moore.
Please.
Okay. Bye. Okay, I just recently found out that Mr. Al Sharpton used to live in Dothan, Alabama. I'm like 30 to 45 minutes from Dothan, Alabama. I did not know that. It's about a year and a half ago.
Yes, when his mother passed away.
I had no idea.
Mm-hmm.
Had no idea. Is there anything else you'd like to talk about, Ms. Moore? Because I cannot get this song to play, and I apologize.
It's okay. Well, you have to invite me back again, and
yes.
We'll have to play the song then. But I think
okay.
You've covered everything really, really very nicely. I'm so pleased that you had me back, and I hope you'll invite me back again. I really enjoyed talking with you.
I enjoy talking to you because you're very intelligent. Very intelligent lady. You are.
Oh, my goodness. I'm laughing because, you know what, y'all? She ain't even stupid. No, you know,
no.
I like to make jokes. I hope I didn't make the wrong kind of joke. I like to make jokes and make fun.
No, you didn't. It's been fun interviewing you, and I hope I didn't ask you any questions that were out the way.
Oh, no, not at all. I really enjoyed talking with you. I always do.
All right. Well, thank you. And again, I apologize for not being able to play your song. Let's Dance is on the Forevermore CD. And that's one of the things. She also has a single called Love Is. That's my favorite. That's my favorite one, Love Is. It's beautiful, kind of slow. And and the CD, Let's Dance, is upbeat tempo.
Right.
Okay. So don't forget to go to, where did you say they could buy your CD?
iTunes.
iTunes, okay.
Not everything escapes me right now. I don't know. I've had a busy day. I apologize, but
that's
okay.
Well,
Amazon.com, right? Everybody knows these, right? CD Baby, and I'm probably not remembering something else. But all of the music places that you can download. I think you may be able to download it from melbamore.com too, from my website.
Okay. All right, everyone. Ms. Morris told you about her website, and this lady. People, I just want you to say 70 singles and a whole lot more, whole lot more. She's even did voiceovers. I mean, there's nothing Miss Melba Moore has not did. This is a hard-working, very talented and blessed lady. And she's opened doors for a lot of singers. I'm just giving her credit what credit is due and respect is due to her. Okay, so Ms. Moore, I'm going to get ready to end the show because I cannot get your song to play. And I apologize to the people listening and to Ms. Moore herself because I tried hard, but it just
she
won't
did.
Do it.
So please, listeners, give her another chance.
Okay. All right. Okay, is there I just got one final question. You know, when I was younger, I really had a huge crush on Freddie Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
I had a huge question. What is he like?
Well,
I mean,
Freddie, he should do stand up.
Okay. All right.
He's a lot of fun to be around. I love him. He loves me. We've always been very, very close, and he's very jovial, very sweet, very kind. He's fun to be around.
Oh, okay.
Plus, he can sing his head off, okay?
Yes. I think it's called Rock Me Tonight.
Rock Me Tonight.
Yeah, I still listen
for
to that.
For old time's sake.
Yes. My mother used to get mad when I listened to that song, too. Okay.
Yeah,
well,
kind of risque, yes.
Thank you for coming on Show Talk with Angela Butler. I also want to let everyone this interview will be on Flame on Radio, not tonight, but next Thursday. FlameOnRadio.com, and that's another station I'm on in Birmingham, Alabama. For those of you who've never listened to this is like my fourth week on Flame on Radio, and I'm getting some great numbers. So up in the thousands, so I'm proud of that. So just continue to listen to Show Talk with Angela Butler. And don't forget to go out and buy Ms. Melba's Moore CD, Forevermore. Just write it to the computer. Click away.
Thank you, Angela.
Thank you, Ms. Moore. Thank you for coming on Show Talk with Angela Butler. Okay, also on May 22nd and May 23rd, once again at 54 Below, New York City, 7 p.m. both nights. You can buy tickets at 646-476-3551, and you'll be able to see and hear Ms. Melba Moore, great single, hard-working lady, hard-working lady, people. I mean,
take care, everybody. Yeah.
Oh, she said take care. She's really been blessed with her talent, and she didn't waste her talent. She did not waste her blessing at all. From what I'm seeing in her bio and understand about her, she's always worked. And she didn't let her talent go to waste. But anyway, I'm going to say God bless everybody and continue to listen to Show Talk with Angela Butler. Ms. Moore, are you still on the phone?
I'm still here.
Oh, okay. I thought you hung up. Okay.
No, I won't let you say goodbye before I hung up.
Okay. Goodbye, Ms. Moore, and I'll have you back, and I apologize.
Okay, I'm going to hang up now. I love you. Goodbye.
Okay. All right, bye. Okay, everyone, thank you for listening to Show Talk with Angela Butler. My book, Charles and Melinda, can be found on createspaceamazon.com. I have a book signing the 23rd in Dothan, Alabama at Barnes & Noble's on Montgomery Highway. So check me out. 1 to 3, I'll be in Dothan, Alabama for a book signing at Barnes & Noble's on Montgomery Highway in Dothan, Alabama. Everyone, have a good night.